But once Brad left his office, Little John sank back into his chair, thinking, "You've planted the seeds of a rebellion, old man. It will be interesting to see how it develops. We might have something worthwhile to report on, sooner or later." Felicia looked uncertain, her gray eyes apprehensive. "Keep working on the data you brought back with you?" Brad nodded vigorously. "Right. Here? In the evenings? Just the two of us?" A little less confidently, he replied, "If you don't mind. I know it's a lot to ask." They were in Brad's sitting room, side by side on the sofa, a pair of half-empty glasses on the coffee table in front of them. Felicia said, "Let me get this straight. Kossoff turned down your request to join the philology team, so you want to work on the data from Alpha on your own?" "If you don't mind," Brad repeated. "In the evenings." He nodded wordlessly. She sat beside him, silently, obviously turning over the situation in her mind. Brad held his breath. At last she said, "Kossoff won't like it." "Screw Kossoff." Felicia's face eased into a smile. "I'd rather not. I'm happy with you." "You'll do it? You'll help me?" "Of course I will, Brad."
"It's going to cut into our social life," he warned.
"You're my social life," she said.
Suddenly Brad felt a lump in his throat. "I love you, Phil."
"I love you too."
Brad felt as if he were in zero gravity again. Weightless. In love. Decisions. The nights stretched into weeks. The weeks melted into months. Brad dutifully carried on with his anthropology work, observing the ship's various scientific departments and the people who composed them, slowly constructing an ever-growing diagram of the relationships among them. His own relationship with Felicia grew deeper and stronger. Almost every evening, they pored over the squeaks and chirps of the octopods, trying to match specific sounds with specific actions and with the areas of their brains that lighted up. Every night, he thought himself the luckiest man in the universe to have her by his side. One evening, he turned from the display screen showing a school of octopods gliding through their ocean and asked her, "Whose turn is it to make dinner?" Sitting beside him, Felicia replied with a grin, "If you have to ask, then it's your turn."
"Good," Brad said, getting to his feet. "Let's go to a restaurant."
Gesturing to the wall screen, Felicia asked, "What about our slithery friends?"
"They can wait. They'll still be here when we get back."
She got up from the sofa.
"Okay, you're the boss."
Brad knew better, but he didn't say a word about it. Later that night, in the darkened bedroom, he asked,
"The night we met, out on the dance floor?"
"Yes," drowsily.
"Who put you up to dancing with me?"
"Put me?
No one.
I saw you in the middle of the dancers, looking kind of lost, kind of forlorn." A line from Othello flashed through Brad's mind. "She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them."
He said, "And you took pity on me?"
"I wouldn't call it pity.
It was awfully kind of you."
Snuggling closer to him, she replied,
"It's worked pretty well, don't you think?"
"I think it's worked out so well that we ought to get married."
"Married?"
Suddenly, Felicia was wide awake.
"It's an ancient custom that's pretty near universal. Every human society has a marriage ritual, symbolizing a couple's dedication to one another."
She giggled.
"Stop talking like an anthropologist.
Will you marry me, Phil?"
"We're living together. Isn't that enough?"
"No. I want to marry you. We can get Captain Desai to perform the ceremony."
"And Professor Kossoff to give away the bride," Felicia added.
It was a week later that Felicia asked,
"Brad, what's wrong?"
"Wrong?" They were sitting on the sofa again, with one of the holographic videos of the octopods on the wall screen. The dinner dishes, with the crumbs and crusts of their meal, were scattered across the coffee table in front of them.
"You've been staring at the screen for almost an hour now," she said. "What's going on inside your head?"
He didn't reply.
"Come on, Brad. I can't read your mind, and your thoughts aren't written on your forehead. Something's troubling you. I can see that much. What is it? Is it me? Something I've done?"
Startled, Brad blurted,
"You? Of course not."
"Then what?" He pointed at the screen. Them.
Them? What about them?
Turning to face her, Brad said, We've been working on their language for how long now? 3 months? Four? More like five. I think we've squeezed as much information out of the data we have as we're going to. There's not much more we can do with it. With a careful nod, Felicia said, We've got 24 word phrases. We think we have 24 phrases.
You're not sure.
Right, he said. But I know how we can test our conclusions. Felicia's expression turned from questioning to alarm.
You're not thinking what I think you're thinking. Or are you?
We've got to make contact with them, Brad said. See if our transliterations of their sounds actually mean what we think they mean.
Contact is forbidden. You know that.
Brad shook his head. We've already made contact, Phil. When we dropped the probes into their ocean, that was contact. If they're intelligent, they must realize that those probes came from somewhere. They've ignored the probes after determining that they're neither food nor a threat.
You want to speak to them?
I want to try.
Kossoff won't permit it,
I know. I'll have to do it without his permission.
He'll crucify you.
Brad smiled tightly at her. Not if I make actual, meaningful contact with the octopods. Not if I present him with a fait accompli. Felicia's eyes were wide with fear.
Especially if you present him with a fait accompli, she said.
Passive v. active. I've got to be very careful about this, Brad told himself. Like walking on eggshells. Or through a minefield. He and Felicia entered the cafeteria. Even though the hour was late, the place was more than half filled with talking, laughing, gesticulating men and women. The huge room clattered with dishware and eating implements.
Chattering apes, Brad thought.
That's what we are. I wonder if there's a race of intelligent reptiles somewhere among the stars. I bet they'd be a lot quieter. Felicia broke into his thoughts.
There he is, waving to us.
Brad saw the man, a short but solidly built black, wearing a bright red tunic over grayish slacks. As he and Felicia walked through the crowded tables, she reminded him,
Gregory Nyerere, philologist.
Who's the woman with him? Brad asked.
I don't know her name, but I'm pretty sure she's a linguist, too.
Hello, Philly, Nyerere said as they got within speaking distance.
He was smiling broadly, his dark face full of good cheer, but Brad noticed Felicia's wince at the nickname.
Brad, this is Greg Nyerere, she said. Greg, Brad McDaniels.
The guy who brought back all that good data from Alpha, said Nyerere, sticking out his hand.
Brad took it in his. The man's grip was firm, strong. He must work out a lot, Brad thought. But his voice was a high, sweet tenor. Brad found it strangely inconsistent with his burly physique.
Kids, meet Estella Waxman, Nyerere introduced.
The young woman was plain-looking, Brad thought. Her nose a trifle too large for her roundish face. She was slightly taller than Nyerere, her figure on the chubby side, skin a golden toast color. Her green eyes sparkled pleasantly, though. Her smile was warm.
Estella's a nurse, Nyerere said as they all sat down at the small table. Sort of my personal medic nowadays.
Felicia asked,
You need a personal nurse?
His smile growing even wider, Nyerere explained.
We met when I pulled my back in the gym. Now Estella hangs out with me to make sure I behave myself.
Within limits, the woman said.
The dinner hour was long past, but the cafeteria was still offering desserts and coffee or tea. Estella volunteered to get drinks and desserts for them all, and Felicia went with her to the dispensing machines lined up along the far wall.
You watch, Nyerere said to Brad as the two women headed for the dispensers. By the time they get back here, they'll know every detail of each other's lives. They'll do a complete data dump in less than 5 minutes.
Brad could only manage to say, Really?
Really? Our computer geeks ought to learn how women exchange information.
Nyerere was grinning, but Brad thought he was serious.
So you're the bird that Kossoff banished to Alpha, Nyerere said.
With a nod, Brad said, That's me.
How'd you put up with it? All alone for 3 months. I would have gone around the bend.
Feeling embarrassed, Brad replied, I talked with Felicia every day, and trying to record the octopod's chatter kept me pretty busy. Looking unconvinced, Nyerere murmured, Still all alone out there?
Eager to change the subject, Brad said, I hear you're working on the octopod's language.
Yeah. Dr. Chang's assigned three of us to trying to decipher the data you brought back.
Interesting stuff. How's it coming along?
Nyerere's grin dissolved slowly.
The computers are grinding through the data, finding correlations. You know.
He made a high-pitched squeak.
That means tasty.
Another squeal.
That means follow me.
That sort of thing.
Then they have a language.
Looks that way. Unless we're totally fooling ourselves.
Felicia and Estella returned with two trays laden with pastries, coffee, and tea. Brad stopped his probing and the conversation moved to more personal subjects. Soon they were gossiping about who was sleeping with whom. And Felicia blurted, Brad's asked me to marry him.
Really?
Estella's face blossomed into a brilliant smile.
Don't get any ideas, Nyerere warned her.
Who'd want to marry you? She taunted. You're already in love with yourself.
They chatted on about marriage and romance until Felicia abruptly said, Greg, you know what would be a very generous thing for you to do?
I'm not getting married.
Estella jabbed an elbow into his ribs.
Who'd have you? I'd have to be crazy.
Laughing, he asked Felicia, So what would be a very generous thing for me to do?
Let Brad see what you've accomplished. Let him see how much of the octopod's language you've deciphered.
It's just scraps and fragments, Nyerere said. The only phrases we can understand represent physical actions. If they have deeper thoughts, we can't translate them because there's no action connected to them.
But you have the brain scans, Brad pointed out.
Nyerere made a sour face. So we see parts of their brains lighting up, so what? That doesn't tell us what it means to them.
Suppose we gave them a stimulus. Then we could see how they react to it.
A stimulus? Like saying hello.
Nyerere's brows climbed almost to his scalp.
That's a no-no. We're not supposed to make contact.
Brad said, but we've already made contact. We've plopped the probes into the ocean alongside them.
Brows knitting now, Nyerere countered.
That's a passive contact. Speaking to them would be an active contact. Strictly verboten.
Brad said, just one word. Just to see how they react. What harm would it do?
Nyerere stared at him.
You're supposed to be an anthropologist. Didn't they teach you about contacting primitive tribes? How contact ruins their culture?
Yes, but
no buts, mister. Kossoff would make us walk the plank if we tried anything like that.
Kossoff, Brad growled.
He's in charge.
Felicia spoke up.
Then why don't you go over his head?
Ask the IAA? Back on Earth?
No, she said, shaking her head.
Ask MC.
MC.
MC? Brad and Nyerere asked in unison. Hunching forward at the table, Felicia replied,
The master computer has all the mission's objectives and operating directives stored in its memory, doesn't it?
Plus a lot more, said Nyerere.
It's even got the data that the predecessor's probes gathered about the whole Mithra system ages ago.
We could ask it when and how it's permissible to contact the octopods.
Brad felt a glow of enthusiasm brightening inside him.
And then we could show Kossoff that we're following MC's guidelines.
Estella asked, Do you think Professor Kossoff would agree to that?
He'd have to, Felicia said, if it's in the mission operating directives.
Nyerere shook his head.
You're going bass-ackwards.
Huh?
You don't ask Kossoff's permission. He'd never give it to you.
He'd find some reason to say no.